Hello there and welcome along to this week's Racing Postcast. It is Monday the 10th of January. I'm Maddie Plale and we're back. James Stevens and Chris Cook both join me to look back on a Grade 1 weekend of action. We're also going to look ahead to this weekend at Warwick, where there are two Grade 2s, the Classic Chase and a Potemps Qualifier, and the Lanzarote meeting at Kempton. And in between, I'm going to ask the lads for some of their unpopular opinions, a Cheltenham Festival fancy, and also a prediction for 2022. So plenty to look forward to. We're going to get stuck in, though, with the start of the show, really, of the whole weekend, which was Constitution Hill winning the Tolworth Hurdle at Sandown in atrocious ground conditions. He again impressed up the Sandown Hill. He's now best priced 9-4 for the Supreme Novices Hurdle. John Bond, his stablemate, a 3-1 shot. Sir Gerhard at fives, and it's 14-1 bar. Let's talk about this performance in isolation first off. James, is there anything in particular that strikes you about this horse?
In particular, no, I don't think so. I think that we thought going into Saturday this could be a real superstar in the making, and he did just have that real touch of sort of specialness about him. You know, we look back on the Tolworth, and I think for sort of the last few years we've sort of looked at it as a race which is more of a graveyard for sort of finding eventual Cheltenham Festival winners than anything, but this horse has all the makings of a real top notcher. I suppose the thing particularly I was really liked was the way he jumped the penultimate hurdle, and just on landing, just almost just sort of squeezed an extra couple of lengths out of it, just a sign of a real sort of naturally talented racehorse. And everything he's done so far has looked really, really good. And going forward, it's going to be very interesting to see how he and John Bond get on in the Supreme. I was having a look through sort of Nicky Henson's record in the race, and he's had first and third in the race before. We'll all remember Altior and Bouvardair 2016 and Shishkin and Chauncery House in 2020. So he's no stranger to run them both in the same race, and they both look like top two milers. So I hope they both head there. The only other thing I thought was really interesting about this horse is he lost on his first run in a point-to-point at Tipperary in April 2016. He's beaten by a horse called by the name of Any Harm Is Asking. And believe it or not, he runs in a 0-120 handicap at Catterick on Thursday. So who knows, maybe he's worth following in that.
That's a superb nugget there. The horses you missed out of that Henderson Supreme was Spirit Sun and Sprinter Sacra. They didn't win, obviously. They were behind Alpha Off, weren't they, in that renewal? But that was a real belter. Chris, how do you compare the two Henderson hot pots, Constitution Hill and John Bond?
It's very difficult, isn't it? I mean, with John Bond, I think you get the sense that his future is going to be over fences, and that might well be true for this one as well. I think probably Constitution Hill is maybe the more professional. John Bond, we get signs, don't we? Get clues that he's settling down a bit, but he's still got that buzzy side to him, which might not be ideal when you get to the Cheltenham Festival. You know, they're both so unexposed, you'd be struggling to know where the top of their ability is.
Would you be worried about Constitution Hill on much better ground and vice versa with John Bond on much softer ground?
Probably not in both cases. I mean, it was better ground, wasn't it, the last time that Constitution Hill ran at Sandown? I thought, to be honest, that the heavy ground was likely against him, you know, and yet he floated over it, didn't he, on Saturday? So I would bet that will probably be okay for him. I don't think that's a reason to be opposing him come Cheltenham time. But you always have that nagging worry about Tolworth winners, don't you? I mean, it is one thing to look impressive in the particular conditions of Sandown in early January. The race probably doesn't have as much depth as some other sort of quality novice hurdles. And it's, you know, you can look really impressive and fail to back it up. You know, there was a Tolworth hurdle from 3 years ago who's only just had his first win since. I mean, there are other reasons why that was in his particular case, but it doesn't always work out as well as you might expect. And, you know, just stepping back from the particular horses involved, just the idea that we've got two Brits at the top of the betting for the Supreme Novice Hurdle suggests to me that we've got something wrong to begin with, you know. If it's 5-1, the first Irish horse in the betting, that's probably the way to go, isn't it? I'm being too simplistic, but it just slightly unnerves me that betting has gone that way.
Well, Somerville Boy did the toll with Supreme Double, didn't he? That wasn't too long ago, so maybe it's not a race to be too downbeat on yet. The strength of form, though, is something that you're clearly not 100% set on. James, do you think Nicky will run both Constitution Hill and John Bonn in the Supreme for starters, or do you think he'll try and split them up?
I think it's a conversation he'll certainly want to have. He sort of said, on Sunday yesterday, it was sort of very clear that, oh no, they're both going to go for it. But I think as Cheltenham sort of edges closer and you see you've got those two superstars, just sort of, well, superstar prospects, the Ballymore will be intriguing. I think if that race cuts up a bit, you could easily see a Constitution Hill running in something like that. I mean, he looks to have quite a lot of sort of natural, sort of he settles well, and you can imagine him having sort of speed. It's a little bit of a speedy race, the Ballymore, I would sort of think. So possibly, but knowing Nicky Henderson, I think he's really got his mind set on having them both in the Supreme. So I'd expect them both to turn up there. But if one of them was to go to the Ballymore, I think it'd be the Constitution Hill.
We want both of them to run in the Supreme, don't we, Chris? That's what the racing fan wants, the big clash, no?
Yeah, I think so. It's it's already one to be excited about. They have different owners who both know their own minds, and if both those owners are convinced that 2 miles is the way to go with these horses, I don't suppose that Nicky will stand in their way. You know, it's there's no harm at all in having two shots at these difficult festival races.
Okay, so two questions in one then for you both. First off, who would you side with at 9-4 and 3-1 respectively out of the Nicky Henderson pair? And then thirdly, any other horse you want to talk about to mention in the same breath as the Supreme duo that you think could put it up to them? James, I'll let you go first.
I think those two are far clear the best in that division. So I think it'll be between them, to be honest. And I would side with Constitution Hill. I thought he was really, really impressive. I know he was slim odds on Saturday, but the way he goes about it, you know, he's really hard to knock, and he's got so much natural talent. It's clear to see.
Do you agree, Chris?
I would take Constitution Hill over John Bonn, but I mean, I don't think there's really any value in backing either of them for the Supreme at this stage. If you're forcing me to have a bet in that race, I'd go Sir Gerhard. Already a festival winner, and you know his future's all in front of him. It was only a maiden hurdle that he won the other day, but you know, couldn't have done it much better. I think it's a fairly good bet that he's going to be winning a Grade One over hurdles at some stage.
Okay, so Chris slightly cooler on the two English hopes for the Supreme. We'll move from the young promising horses to the old veterans and the Univet Veterans Handicap Chase that also took place at Sandown on Saturday. It was won by an 18-1 shot in Prime Venture, but this was a really fascinating race tactically to watch because it was dominated by the grey horse, Valadon, whom Lily Pynchon was riding and claiming 5. He was ultimately the final finisher in 5th position. It looked for some way as if he was going to steal it, and there seems to have been some polarisation to whether this was a good, bad or a good ride or a bad ride, James. Which side of the fence are you on?
I suppose it's probably as good as a performance as you can sort of expect. I mean, this is it's a muddling sort of race. There's a lots of really talented old animals in there, and I think they just decided he's 22-1. Let's just go for it and see if anyone can catch me. I mean, in that sort of ground, you've got to jump well at Sandown. It's an idea that you want to employ, and look, it didn't pay off. If it did pay off, it would have been perfect. But look, he's run his race, isn't he? But I suppose I would say on the side then it's a good ride because they've gone for something different. And hey, it didn't pay off, but it's a big Saturday race. I thought it was a muddling sort of race to look back on, and it's sort of a one you don't really want to throw it forward all too much because these are all the veterans. But I thought that the fact it was such a sort of race with so much emphasis on stamina probably made it right for Prime Venture. I mean, he's been in Welsh Nationals in the previous years. They decided to sort of change the target and come here. And I think the fact that it's a really sort of strong staying 3 miles around Sandown has probably worked out perfect for him again. I know there's quite a lot of support for Final Nudge. He ran all right, didn't he, in second. I'd imagine they'll both turn up in the Midlands National, and you'd possibly think that Final Nudge might turn the tables on him. But again, it's this time of year.
Why do you think that? Why do you think he'll turn the tables?
I just think that well, he ran very well in the race before, and I just think that he is the sort of one that's going to want an extreme test. I actually thought, well, he'd be a good horse for an Ida, but he's probably not going to run in that now, considering how close it is. So I think just a real mudlark who just wants to stay all day. I think that's just what he is, and I think it's going to be even more of a real extreme test in the Midlands National. But it's one of those races. There's going to be something improving there, and he's 13 years old, so he's going to have to pull out a career best if he is going to win a Midlands National. But a good race, and always nice to see these veterans getting their big slot on the Saturday.
Indeed, fantastic, isn't it? And Prime Venture 11, not quite as old as Final Nudge, who's 13, so we could well see him in this race for another couple of years. Chris, slightly different take on this, but when the ground is that bad at Sandown, I mean, we do like seeing these veterans, but is it a nice spectacle seeing them finish so tired? Or do you think that's just, you know, something that we perhaps get a little bit too obsessed about, and it, and, you know, they're fit horses and they're well horses, and, you know, we put our trust in our jockeys to pull them up if they're no longer going?
Yeah, I think the latter, that's the way that I lean. Nice would be the wrong adjective. And there's a responsibility on the jockeys to look after these horses when they do get tired. But, you know, fundamentally, as a long-standing fan of jump racing, you know, I think of softer ground as a safer ground, because if you fall on it, then there's that cushion there, you know, and your chances of sustaining a bone-related injury are reduced. So the horses get tired, and some people find that unappealing to look at, but, you know, I don't particularly see any harm in athletes getting tired. You know, exhausted is a different thing, but you know, as we said, that's where the jockey's responsibility comes in, and I do think jockeys these days are more switched on about the need to pull up as necessary. The Valadon ride, I mean, it was thrilling, and I think
it just totally split the race apart, didn't it?
Yeah, I mean, exactly that, because Prime Ventures come from the back, but there were a bunch of quite fancy horses that, you know, were held up and just never got into it. You know, they just couldn't make the effort necessary to even close some ground on Valadon down the back straight. So you got horses that on paper were quite appealing, like the King's Writ, Gwensily Barbas. You just never got within a mile of the pace. And so to that extent, that the job was done. At some point on the way around, there needed to be another breather or an extended breather. And I think possibly when Valadon kicked on again down the back straight in the final circuit, that was the point where, in fact, he just needed to sort of sit tight and wait. You could tell, couldn't you, when he got to the pond fence and kind of clambered over it, that although he was still clear at that point, the end was nigh. So, I mean, you know, a right throw for anyone who's taken the 22-1, and this is not a horse that's easy to win with these days. But yeah, just at some point, that ride has been a bit too swashbuckling. But, you know, she's a £5 claimer, still learning the game, so these things happen. Very cool ride from Adam Wedge. You know, and then I think you'd probably have to say things worked out brilliantly for Prime Venture in a way that they haven't done in the past. Maybe this was the unique combination of circumstances we needed for that horse to sort of finally show the promise that has long been there. I find it very enjoyable, even though as a veteran's final, it maybe didn't have some of the star familiar names that you get in that race over the years. But basically, it's a great race to have, a great spot in the calendar to have it. And it really lifts the day. I mean, for my money, that's the star race on that card now, more than the Tolworth.
Well, and it's certainly the better race to be punting in anyway, isn't it? All big fans of the veterans. And from one veteran to another, Jepek, well, he was winning that race 2 years ago, and now it's off to Wincanton for him, where he won it 40-1, pulling off an incredible punt for his connections. And this was a fairly bloodless victory. The 13-year-old beat Blair Gowrie and Dan McGrew, Golden Emblem. And again, they were the only to finish in what was a valuable handicap hurdle. What do you think the main talking point is out of this race, Chris?
Jepek, the fire still burns at the age of 13, I suppose that would be it. And he hasn't had too many hurdle wins in his life. I'm just trying to find when the last one was. So that's his first success in a handicap hurdle. He did sort of drop into novice hurdle company at the end of 2019 and won at Chepstow then. But I mean, just great to see. I mean, he dropped to a mark of 124, having been a stone higher than that at some stage of his career. Hadn't shown any particular promise, you know, for a good long time. In the right race, you know, when a horse drops far enough down the ratings, they can still be dangerous. And I must admit, I'm feeling kind of rueful that I didn't look at that race and take him more seriously, because that SP of 40-1. It doesn't take much, does it, when a horse is that price, to convince yourself that he's backable. There must be some shrewd people out there who gave the race more pre-race attention than I did, who were on excellent terms for themselves, including the owner, I think, who had 200 quid each way, 50-1. So that'll pay the bills for a bit, maybe a couple of weeks.
Yeah, very good spot indeed, and kudos to Connections for actually, you know, keeping the faith with him, because at 13, I'm sure many other people would have wouldn't have done. Good ride from Ben Godfrey, I thought, James.
Yeah, I've written exactly the same thing down. He sort of went quite aggressively, almost just sort of slowed it up a slight, give the horse a breather, and then just had enough, just when you're thinking, okay, here we go, here come the rest of me, just had enough to go on again. I completely agree with you. It was a great ride. And I have to say, I was there down there on Saturday. It was cold. It was miserable. I got absolutely soaked about twice. But it did put a smile on a lot of people's faces, actually. There was a big cheer when he came back into the paddock. There wasn't a big crowd there, but it was one that really really warmed up. One that really warmed everyone up on a cold day. I mean, what happens to his horse next? I don't know. I possibly could be retired. But the owner was very, very emotional, and as Chris says, a few bills paid, and that's what the game's all about, isn't it? Celebrating 41 winners.
And can I say I was pleased for Rex Dingle. I mean, Jepic used to be quite an important horse for him. I think he was a £3 claimer when they won the veterans final, so he obviously not riding him anymore, but he did have a win on that card at 80-1 on Pilsen Pen, so it's nice that he was able to get something from the day on the day when Jepic went in again.
Yeah, I was really interested in the novices hurdle that was won by Unanswered Prayers and for Chris Gordon and Tom Cannon. Other notable winners on the card, Another Crick won the 2 mile handicap chase, and Killer Clown bounced back to form in the 2.5 mile handicap chase. Any for the tracker though, Chris, anything caught your eye in behind somewhere that you think could be worth a punt next time? You've got a good record with this sort of thing.
Oh dear God. It's not particularly clever, but I mean, one that went straight in the tracker just in case was Grey Diamond, who started fav for the 2 mile handicap chase at Wincanton, and was maybe going to win. And then at the last fence, you know, had a bit of trouble with the landing gear and sort of slithered along in his stomach. Doesn't actually go down as a fall, which might sort of get people curious the next time, oh, what happened there? He got to his feet and finished seventh, so that's how it's going to appear in this line of form next time. And I just wonder if that will shore up the price wherever he turns up the next time. He might be worth a look, you know, because he's clearly on a rating that he's able to beat.
Yeah, he's got some in hand, hasn't he? Great Diamond. James, anything that you added to your tracker after the weekend?
Yeah, the first race at Wincanton on Saturday, the second horse, Tarahumara, I think it's pronounced, ran a really, really nice first run, debut for Emma Lavelle, was held up, sort of made good headway through the really testing conditions, and finished a good second behind Great Ocean, who'd had some pretty decent form. Philip Hobbs spoke quite highly of him, actually, in his stable tour, so he's fairly useful type. This was a really encouraging sort of debut. The full brother won on heavy, so probably wants it even more testing, and he looks like he'd be capable of winning a race of this sort of level at some point when the ground continues to soften.
Fantastic, thanks for that, James. Going to take a quick breather, but don't go anywhere, because we're going to talk about the mystery purchase of JP McManus just after this.
Are you football crazy? Then Racing Post's new podcast could be just for you. Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs brings all of the best football betting insight from Racing Post's top football tipster, As well as that, Mark will be joined each week by a friend from the betting community to guide listeners through their best bets. Simply search Mark Langdon's Bet Clubs on your podcast app of choice and listen today.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. Now, there's been a big shuffling around in the cross-country market for the Cheltenham Festival, and that's because JP McManus has made a high-profile purchase. Chris, what's the name of the horse? Tell us more.
Prongard is the horse, and yeah, I must admit, in common with most people, he was sailing below my radar, but maybe there was obviously scope for a big-name horse to drop into the cross-country market. You know, Tiger Roll kicking on a bit, Easy Land had that setback. And so, yeah, JP has stepped in to buy this very promising young horse. He's only six, Prongard. He's been racking up the ones in France, where he's been trained by Guillaume McCare. And he in particular was impressive in November at Compiègne in the Grand Steeplechase Cross Country, a listed contest in which I think Easy's Land also caught the eye. Maybe a couple of years before, before he was bought by JP and came over and won at the festival. There was a sudden market move on Saturday night where, he, having been 20 to 1 for the cross country, Prongard is now down to about 4 or 5 to 1. He's fav. He's unproven in terms of, you know, British racing. You don't quite know how he's going to match up against, you know, the good cross country horses that we have in this country and in Ireland. But clearly from his the quality of his French form, he's going to be in the mix. And that's where he's going. In any case, he's joined Enda Bolger. And if you haven't backed him already, it's too late.
And Easy's Land now with John Joe O'Neill hearing just now. James, would you be a sort of a buyer of this sort of storyline of JP going in hard for one of the sort of unproven horses in the division?
It's a funny old sort of division, the cross country, isn't it? Because you can think you've got all the makings of a real top horse for it. But, you know, we've seen some really top, you know, sort of grade one horses who have been tried over the fences, but they just sort of either take it to them or they don't. And when you can come up across a horse who A, looks really, really talented, and B, has got some sort of form over there, that sort of unique type of test, it really does make them really quite valuable. Cheltenham Festival winners are what all those owners do it for. And I suppose, without sort of sounding silly, the cross country is sort of one of the races that if you wanted to spend big to essentially try and buy your best chance of a winner, the cross country is that, because it's such a unique race and you sort of know what sort of horse you need. So yeah, I can sort of see why he's got it. I mean, I have to admit, from my perspective, I was a little bit disappointed because he's got a horse called Shady Operator, who I thought might have a real chance in it. So maybe it just shows how clueless I am that JP McManus has gone in because he doesn't fancy it. So my 10 to 1 fancy is not looking so good now. But yeah, interested to see what the horse can do. And just another little idea that the festival isn't too far away now, is it?
No, creeping ever closer. And on that, we're going to ask you a couple of questions now. The first of which is one Cheltenham Festival fancy. And James, I will let you go first because it's not going to be Shady Operator anymore, is it?
No, it's not. And I've been called one of those in the past as well. I've banged on about St. Segal for too long, so I thought, well, I'll give you something different. And I noticed the betting for some of the handicaps is out. And I'm intrigued by the Boss's Oscar, who was sent off quite a strong favourite last year. I think it was in the Potemps. It was in one of the hurdles races. And ran a really good race, really good second. Looked like physically he'd improved for a fence. And perhaps it's not quite achieved the sort of level I thought he might have of fences. But he was pulled up the last day, sent off quite a strong favourite over Christmas. And given he's got all the makings of a really well handicapped type who's going to improve over fences, he's about 20 to 1 for the Ultima. If Gordon Elliott can sort of get him back and in decent form, possibly at the Dublin Racing Festival, puts in a good run, I could see him being a bit of value there. So the Boss is Oscar for the Ultra at 20 to 1, I think. But in terms of a short price one and sort of one of those, I do think Champ is going to have a race made for him in the Stairs Hurdle. Loads of pace to aim at with Classical Dream in there. We know he stays well. I really hope they go for it because I do quite fancy him quite strongly.
Wonderful. Two for the price of one from James. Chris, what have you got?
A tiny bit boring, but I'm going to go in again with Manila Indo 8-1 for the Gold Cup. Still too big. I mean, you need the stables for him to turn around between now and then, but there's loads of time. Galvin, quite impressive the other day, but you don't win the Cheltenham Gold Cup at Christmas. I like the Cheltenham form that Manila Indo has. I mean, I appreciate there are other horses in the race, including Galvin, that have won at the festivals in the past, but that seems to be where Manila Indo comes alive. I think he's still a big price.
It was a good run at Down Royal, and it's not like he didn't show anything in the King George, did he? It was just probably a slightly mistimed ride.
Well, maybe that, and I mean, I don't think he was probably at his peak anyway. But yeah, I'm sure we're going to see a better effort from him in the middle of March.
Okay, and to add to that, Chris, one unpopular opinion that you've got at the moment.
I tell you what, I hate to have unpopular opinions, goodness me. And, obviously you hope that when you put your opinions into print, eventually they become popular, right? I mean, that's the whole idea. So I tell you one thing that I hear from quite a lot of people these days, and it's even seems to be becoming a fashionable opinion to me, is that there's too much chat about Cheltenham and we should be focusing on the rest of the jump season. And it just winds me up a bit, because whenever it comes time to talk about flat racing again, British flat racing, if it's kind of an amorphous idea, but if there was such a body as British flat racing, they would give their eye teeth to have a focal point at the end of the season that of the same standing as the Cheltenham Festival, and they would spend millions on creating it if it could be done, but it's just it can't quite. And I think jump racing in Britain and Ireland should be giving thanks every morning that it exists. It's something for all of us sort of fans as well as journalists to look forward to, and it does give meaning to races that otherwise might not need to be examined in a great deal of depth, and it helps sell daily newspapers. Not that most people care about that, but I mean that shows the impact of it. For a long time, I gather the Daily Mirror sales used to go up in the middle of March, and the execs weren't quite sure why until somebody pointed out to them a certain sporting event that was going on in the Gloucestershire area. It's a huge thing. We're so lucky to have it. I'm not sure that we deserve credit for having created it. It's just something that's evolved into a media giant, a sporting giant. It's the best week of my year, and has been for as long as I can remember. You never hear about people in the NFL moaning about too much Super Bowl chat, do they? I mean, nobody ever says, well, let's just enjoy this November victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. There's a sport that's doing fantastically well, becomes more popular every year, and is slowly taking over the world. And part of it is because, they've got that focal end point to their season where it all builds up to the Super Bowl extravaganza. If anything, I think we should be talking about the Cheltenham Festival more. I appreciate that does not suit trainers and jockeys that don't typically get the kind of material that will take them to the festival. And of course, for them, they have to define success in different ways. And that's perfectly valid. But, for the rest of us who are just talking about jump racing from the point of view of an enthusiast, Cheltenham's a brilliant thing. And I can't get enough of it. It's the sort of thing that gets you through dark January days, and not something to be regretted at all.
Well, it will certainly get us through this weekend, won't it? Because we could see some Cheltenham clues on offer at Warwick and at Kempton. That was a very optimistic take, Chris, on that. I liked it. James, what about you? What's an unpopular opinion that you've got?
Yeah, I'll just start by saying I'm with Chris, actually. So maybe less so unpopular, Chris, because you've got my backing. I agree with you. And I think as well, not only does Cheltenham really sort of sell the sport to a new level, I think as well, for a lot of people that are sort of just got getting into horse racing and just sort of beginning to grow an interest in it, a little bit like I was at one point, that Cheltenham Festival as the end target is a really good structure, because it's quite easy to understand, isn't it? You run all season and you hope you're going to win at Cheltenham. It's not something that's difficult to understand. Whereas if you start giving the rules and regulations about how do you get into the EBF final, it's all a little bit more complicated. But anyway, that's a different story. I've struggled on this one a bit, but it's sort of on the same line of the Cheltenham Festival. And I know that there's been a lot of talk about which races should and shouldn't be in there. I don't think we should have mares races at the Cheltenham Festival, is my unpopular opinion. I think that they really don't really sell a lot. I think that the mare's hurdle, for all it is, it just doesn't quite have the same buzz for me. I just think that it's usually pretty weak, and I would replace it with just a Ryanair hurdle, is what people tend to call it, 2.5 mile hurdle, which are the colts, the geldings versus the mares and such. And we know we talk about the allowances and stuff, but I just feel the mares program just doesn't really add anything to the festival. I think that the mares chase has so far been pretty disappointing. The mares novice hurdle is just a race I don't particularly look forward to. And given, you know, we lost the 2.5 mile novice handicap chase, which was a great race, it had so many good winners in there, I just think that the mares hurdle takes away from the other championship races. And while I'm sort of saying let's put another one in, I think that that would still be far more an intriguing prospect than the mares hurdle as it is at the minute. So that's my opinion, and perhaps it is a bit more unpopular than Chris's.
Okay. There we are, two Cheltenham-based opinions then. What about predictions? James, I'll let you go first on this one. What do you think is going to happen this year?
Yeah, away from the jumps this time, I think Tom Markand is going to be champion jockey this year. He had a good season last year. He was third. I think he had 117 in the championship. Quite a way off William Buick and Ocean Murphy, but we know how they really just went for it at the end. And I think Tom has got the ammunition. If he does need to really go for it and try and win it, he would get the support from it. He did have 176 winners in 2021 across the year, so only O'Sheen rode more winners. So he's a really talented jockey. He's well connected. He picks up plenty of good rides and has plenty of winners. And sadly, won't see Mr. Murphy in action this season. But someone's got to win the championship. And while a lot of people think it might be Buick, I think it's going to be Tom's year.
Can you dig around for some prices on that while we're getting Chris's? I'll leave it with you, Chris.
Can I just say that's quite likely the Tom Markwin thing, because I had a few quid on him to be champion last year at an early stage, and of course it didn't work out. I haven't waded in this time, so I should just keep myself out of the market for James's sake, and that'll improve his chances. My prediction for this year is that we're going to see disciplinary penalties ramped up for jockeys, and I feel a certain amount of sympathy for them over this. We've got the whip review, don't we, which is the results of which are going to be published February or March. We don't have any exact date, as far as I know. It's been trailed literally years ago that the BHA was minded to ramp up penalties as a way of addressing that particular problem. And so, you know, it's unbackably odds on that is going to be at least part of the outcome. Stiffer penalties for jockeys who breach the whip rules. We are also talking about interference these days, aren't we? I mean, I was just banging on this morning about how, the BHA should be doing a thorough review of the interference rules and considering about how we can promote safety as a priority for everybody. I can just see penalties being ramped up again for jockeys in that area. I don't think it's a very sophisticated way of tackling any problem. I think probably if that is the only thing that's done with regard to the whip or with regard to interference, you know, those problems will persist. You know, that will not be much of a solution. My thinking is that you probably need to sort of broaden the pain. You need to sort of drag trainers and owners who employ jockeys that breach the whip rules or interference rules into the soup with their rider, you know, and they should have to sort of suffer some kind of penalty, you know, where their jockey breaches the whip. And by doing that, that I think is how you change the culture. You know, jockeys ride to please their employers. For the most part, I think they're prepared to sort of put up with short suspensions if that's the price that has to be paid for doing something that pleases owners and trainers, because they know that they'll continue to get support from those people down the line, and fundamentally that's what matters. If trainers and owners are getting punished for those infractions as well, then it'll be made clear to jockeys, you know, they must not breach the rules, and I think that's, you know, that's how you get us towards a better place in the future. At any event, even if that is not an attractive way forward to the ruling body, I think we have to do something more than just hitting jockeys harder than before. You know, I don't see that leading to any brighter future, except a future in which, you know, jockeys are getting suspended for longer. It's not particularly fair, and I don't think it will be effective.
Okay, very, very interesting that, especially given the attention that's been heaped on those rules and the way that they are stewarded, especially with the Freddie Tillicke and Graeme Gibbons case, of course, which has reached its conclusion. And from some unpopular opinions and some strong views back towards the racing, this weekend, two major handicaps, the Lanzarote Hurdle and the Classic Chase, will be previewing those in a moment.
Download the brand new Racing Post Progeny Tracker, the only tracker of its kind, giving you the ability to track unnamed race horses by any sire or dam, and you can also get easy access to sales information. You can download it for free on the App Store by searching Progeny Tracker.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast, and in this final section we're going to be looking ahead to the weekend's action, and Saturday in particular. We've got two real blockbuster handicaps for you. The 240 at Kempton is the Coral Lanzarote Handicap Hurdle, a listed race over 2 mile, 5 furlongs. And Chris, you were looking at some of the Nicky Henderson trained runners. He has a good record in the race, so I'm not surprised.
Yeah, he does. Do you know, I seem to remember backing Nonceau in this years and years ago, specifically because it was Nicky Henderson's type of race, and only found out afterwards he'd never won it before. He's won it a few times since, and he obviously got a good number of entries, but it looks like Marie's Rock is the intended one. One of course, in distance on Boxing Day, by a barrel load from Matt Tyre, who's, you know, a decent talent in himself. Gone up to a mark of 140 now, up £9, Marie's Rock, but I would be surprised if that's the ceiling of her ability. She'd be where I'm looking first of all for the Lanzarote winner.
Yeah, good to see her bounce back to form last time, wasn't it? She'd shown ability prior to that and had some issues. James, what about you?
Yeah, I think this race is going to be interesting, looking ahead to that sort of Cheltenham Festival form with Gelino Bello. I mean, we know all that Blazing Carl has developed into a really top novice hurdler and his favourite for the Albert Bartlett. This horse could really prove that form is red hot. You know, he's finished second to him twice, the first of which over the same distance he'll run over on Saturday. So how much improvement he's got, I wouldn't know, but he's likely going to be near the top of market, and I think he's quite a nice horse, so I'd like him. The only other horse I've looked at that I'm quite intrigued by is a horse called Winter Fog for Emmett Mullins. When he brings horses over here, as he has done in the last few years, they're always sort of dangerous. And I looked at the form of this horse, who was second in a 27 runner handicap at Leopardstown over 3 miles. That looks a decent enough piece of form. We know how good the Irish handicappers have been in here and been in Britain. So I'd be intrigued to see whether he can step forward from that, because his form at the end of last season was promising. And I don't know what the weather's like, but given it's sort of going to have a fair bit of cut in it, but not too much, I think that might be spot on for him as well.
Okay, so Winter Fog for James, Marie's Diamond for Chris. We'll go to the 3 o'clock at Warwick, which is the Agitur UK Limited Classic Handicap Chase, a Grade 3. And it's a similar story to what we've been seeing a lot of this season, really. Venetia Williams and Lucinda Russell, two women who are going to hopefully have a big part to play in this. Venetia has Achille and Commodore among her runners. Commodore, of course, so impressive when we last saw him at Cheltenham in a Grade 3. And on the same card, Corot Rambler for Lucinda Russell made a really interesting impression, or at least on me anyway, in novice company. And the trainer also has Big River, the 12-year-old, in here. But some really interesting youngsters coming up, as well as the previous winner, Not a Chance, Chris. It should be a good race, shouldn't it?
Ah, definitely. I mean, you're looking at the 5-day entries and thinking, if this could just be the final field, that'd be brilliant. I guess it won't be. But yeah, you mentioned Not a Chance there. I'm hoping that when the bookies chalk us up, he's going to be a decent price, because, you know, his recent form figures are just, you know, nothing. Perhaps the wider betting public, unlike yourself, may have allowed his name to slip down the back of the sofa of their memories. He won the Classic Chase last year and has now come back down to exactly the same rating. But I thought there was some promise in his effort in the Tommy Whittle last time. He went up to a mark of 146 and was in better races after he won the Classic Chase last year. I think the Grand National Trial at Haydock probably came a bit soon and was just, you know, a sort of test that he didn't really enjoy. Scottish National, he just wasn't up to it, end of season stuff. Needed his first run back, last run was better. You could just see him peaking again at the right moment. And, you know, I always think Warwick is a bit of an idiosyncratic track, so course form is good news. Slight worry about the trainer form, because Kingy hasn't had a winner in the last couple of weeks, but I mean, some of them have been running fairly well. So as long as, you know, there's double figure odds available, but not a chance, I wouldn't let that deter me.
This Warwick card, I really, really enjoy it, you know. And don't forget, we got a Cheltenham winner not that long ago when Willoughby Court won the Leamington Spa Novices Hurdle as well. James, anyway, who do you like in the big handicap?
Yeah, looks a cracking race, as it always is. I think not a chance, I'd agree with Chris. He's won just the form figures don't look too good sort of on first glance. But yeah, Warwick is a kind of a confusing sort of track, and he's taken to it well once. The horse that I was immediately drawn to, because I've sort of had my eye on for a while, is David Pipes on a Jericourt Rock, who ran really well, I thought, in the Mandarin at Newbury. He's only six, and he looks like he's just improving and might just be one that will take to a real sort of extreme stamina test. And it's not going to be as heavy as a classic chase has been run on in previous years, but it'll be soft enough, you'd expect. And that might just be the key to this horse. The one significant worry with him is a six-year-old hasn't won the classic chase since 1981, so that's a bit of a worry, but he's an improving horse, and I do think that a big trip, a big long trip and a bit of soft ground is going to be the key to getting this horse going from a few good placed efforts to winning a big one. But yeah, he's the one I like.
And Maddie, can I just say before we move on from that Warwick card, just something that catches my eye there. I'm looking at the Pretemps qualifier. The entry for the race this year, I think, really says something about the changing nature of jump racing. 9 entries from Gordon Elliott, plus 2 from Ronan McNally, out of 19 total entries at this stage. So more.
Just remind people what the changes are.
Well, I mean, I'm talking about the changing power in jump racing, you know, and how basically the Irish domination is, if anything, going to become even more so. But yeah, to see a Warwick Pretemps qualifier just dominated like that by, you know, in particular Gordon Elliott, but also, you know, in general, Irish entries, it's just a bit different, isn't it, from the days when horse like To Be Fair would be coming out on top in a race like that. I think there'll be some British trainers looking at that 5-day entry and quailing a bit.
Yeah, very interesting, isn't it? 9, did you say, in the potential?
9 Gordon Elliott entries, 2 from Ronan McNally's, and 8 from Britain.
incredible, isn't it? Interesting to see which one of those actually goes and wins, and which ones will adequately trial for the big final in March. Anyway, before we leave you, let's get this week's naps.
This will not be beaten.
James, you can go first.
Yep, sure. We're going to Exeter tomorrow for the 12:20. Horse I sort of had my eye on for a bit from Philip Hobbs called Dan's Chosen, who's been a little bit disappointing from what I was hoping he might go and do this season, but I suppose now is his time to win. Now he's in handicap. He's also up in trip and tested on heavier ground. I think that's probably the way to go with him. He was second to the horse that was second in the Tolworth on Saturday, and then ran it in a pretty decent race at Utoxshire, I thought. I don't think that's a bad race at all. As I say, I think going up to 3 miles might make the difference for him, and he's about 5-1 at the minute. So yeah, it'd be nice to see if he can improve. And just whilst I'm there, Tom Markhand is 5-1 to win the Flat Jockeys Championship. So let's see if they're right come the end of the year.
It's not a bad price, is it? Are you at Exeter tomorrow?
No, I'm afraid not, Maddie, no.
Well, at least you won't be. It always seems to be absolutely grim weather there, doesn't it? So hopefully you'll be inside in the warm anyway.
Going off from Saturday anyway.
Chris, what about you? Are you going anywhere interesting this week?
Do you know, I haven't made up my mind. You mentioning grim weather at Exeter, you know, that sounds like my idea of a good time. I might get in the car. You feel, don't you, if you go jump racing this time of year, it should be bad weather, shouldn't it? You know, you
I tell you what, it was tipping it down at Sundown on Saturday.
Well, there ought to be that sort of feeling of virtue for having made the effort to go out there and get soaked and try and back a winner. Anyway, but I'm betting at Donny tomorrow, 3:20 at Doncaster. There's a horse called Known, who used to be with Nicky Henderson, showed a bit of promise a couple of years ago in novice company. He was actually third in a novice hurdle at Newbury that was won by Shishkin, Shaking Up Harry second, and Known third. He's come down a bit from his initial handicap rating. I mean, he hasn't raced much for the last 18 months, and he's switched to John Joe Neal's yard, and you know, evidently things have not gone all that smoothly for him, but I'm sure he's now on a rating that he can beat if he's on song. He's had one run this season at Aintree in December, and he doubled in price before the off. You know, I guess he just wasn't ready, and it was really a bit more of a test than he would really appreciate, 3 mile on soft. But he's back down in trip again, and the ground won't be as testing tomorrow at Donny. So that's Known, 3:20 Doncaster Tuesday. And it's, you know, it's a decent sized field, so I'm hoping for a price.
Fantastic. Well, best of luck, James and Chris, with your selections. Thanks for joining us. As usual, make sure you stay tuned to Friday's show for a more detailed look at the weekend's racing. We will see you very soon. Bye-bye.